The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 60. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 60, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sex offenses by corrections personnel. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bagby, Barbuda, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Peasley, Korberg, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 60 do pass. And I hand over the explanation to the good gentleman from Goshen.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring before you House Bill 60 regarding sex offenses and corrections personnel. You may recall that a few years ago we actually codified under Title 6 that it was a crime for corrections personnel and inmates to engage in consensual sexual relations, and specifically, if you've been reading your sexual assault statutes in light of our most recent bills, specifically in relation to sexual intrusion. However, we left out a portion of the statute when it comes to sexual contact, which is sexual assault in the third degree. And so what this bill basically does is it goes through and it adds just a few, one you can see, instead of saying on line 7, page 2, that it's 62303A, Romanet 1 through Romanet 6, it extends that through Romanet 7, which if you refer back to second degree sexual assault, you will see that that is the section that applies to actors who are employees, et cetera, of corrections systems. So basically what this bill does is it also makes it illegal for corrections personnel to have sexual contact, even though consensual, with an inmate.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 60 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 60 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 111. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 111, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to the Clean Coal Task Force. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 111 do pass. And there is a Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I think I'd like to do a little explanation of the bill. It was accepted by the Appropriations Committee, as you just heard, with lots of comments and I think lots of support. So with that, I would like to call on the good senator from, or representative from Laramie, Wyoming, to explain his proposed Committee of the Whole Number 1.
Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chairman. I present to you, let me move the amendment first. I move that Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 for House Bill 111 do pass and ask for your favorable consideration. Speaking to this amendment, fix the mic here. In reading through this bill, I commend the and applaud the committee members on the Minerals Committee for working and taking a leadership role with clean coal. I see a little bit of an absence of something that I think is important that we at least consider today. The idea of clean coal is more than just the burning of coal and figuring out how to burn it cleaner, and removing the, you know, impurities and the gasification process. It's also the sequestration part of it. We've spent a lot of time, and I know in the last session and this session, talking about pore space, the rights of landowners, the rights of mineral rights, and what we do with the sequestration part of this. If you read in section that relates to this amendment, which is on page 2, line 19, it says a proposal shall enhance and improve clean coal technologies with an emphasis on methods of combusting sub-bituminous coal at high altitudes, which is basically how do we burn coal here in Wyoming since we're at high altitude. What I want to add is a little bit of scope to the committee and the task. Since they're asking for money to do research, the other half of it is the sequestration part. So I want to add in the words carbon capture and storage technology. That's part of the comprehensive strategy, I guess, with clean coal. If you get online and you research and get on Wikipedia and you research clean coal, it talks very much that this is the critical component to basically burning coal clean is the sequestration effort. And if we don't spend money and assign a task to provide a solution for this part of the problem, and we only focus on the gasification, I think we're selling ourselves short. And if you look at the definition of DOE as it relates to what clean coal is, it's very much in line with what my amendment is. And I bring this amendment and not at all to hold back or set back any of the good efforts that the committee has done. I just think that this is an important part as we try to figure out how to convey and transfer our CO2 and our and sequester it as it relates to Wyoming and its economy. And I ask for your support.
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My initial response to this amendment is probably on and against the amendment, and it's not because that I don't think there's, obviously we're all focused on carbon sequestration, but I don't believe three little Roman I's does say that it doesn't limit it. It just makes the emphasis on methods of combusting our coal at high altitudes. And I really, I think the proposals can include anything, shall enhance and improve clean coal technologies. I just think that there's some merit to leaving the emphasis on combusting the coal at high altitudes and making sure that the clean coal technology is there. And I don't think that in any way limits the fact that they can still look at other projects that might have to do with carbon sequestration, but I'm going to encourage you not to support this amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and opposed to the amendment, the bringer of the amendment did talk to me earlier this morning about this proposed change, and I thought that was good form for a new legislator, and I thanked him for the heads up. The amendment is not fatal to the bill, but I believe it's unnecessary, and it's an unwise proposed change. 3 years ago, when we this concept of a clean coal technology research with matching grants from industries and by the university and driven by the School of Energy Resources board, which is called the Clean Coal Task Force, what we were after is how to advantage the state of Wyoming in a fairly short-term period with research that could be applied by industries in the state and keep that coal industry viable for the benefit of the nation. And the words in there on page 2, line 19 and 20, is enhance and improve coal technologies. This board has a very broad and deep background. By and large, they come from the energy industry, which was the direction that we set up in this. The board members themselves have staff that can help them analyze what makes good sense for research projects, and they work very closely with the School of Energy Resources staff and director and the faculty at the University of Wyoming. So I think when we start down the path of our trying to direct in detail where they should go with this research, I think we're beyond what we as legislators thought was the right place to be initially. So that amendment would start us down that path, and I'm not sure that we know, as legislators, I know I don't, of all of the things that people in the research field can think are important for the beneficiation and the continued use and the benefits that Wyoming gets from that use, as some of the people that are making the decisions on that with the broad direction rather than directed direction. So I urge your defeat of the amendment.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chair, far be it from me from getting up and saying anything about the way the Minerals Committee is working, but spending 8 years on that committee and knowing a little bit about it, in that particular section of the bill and looking at the amendment, I guess I would be owning for it. And quite frankly, from all the conversations I had with people being involved in it, there is another part of sequestration that hasn't been discussed that much. And I am aware of some of the efforts in the rest of the United States that is looking at sequestration by converting carbon dioxide, water, back with bacteria and algae, converting it to biodiesel. And that particular process would fit right in here. And this amendment does not address that, but quite frankly, the good young representative sparked my memory, and I will be, whether this passes or fails, I'll be offering an amendment to make sure that that's included, because we shouldn't limit to strictly carbon sequestration by injecting into formations, whether it be carbon storage, as all the bills that we've had in injecting into pore space, or carbon sequestration by using an enhanced oil recovery, simply because, number one, the disposal of carbon dioxide in deeper formation is expensive, very expensive. And I will guarantee you that I have followed a project in Colorado of carbon dioxide flooding for enhanced oil recovery. That project in many ways was very limited from an economic standpoint, simply because the problems with corrosion from the carbonic acid created in those projects. But we have to look at all aspects, because if we ignore the economics for the industry of what it takes care of it, we aren't doing our job when it looks at carbon sequestration. So I would actually support this amendment, and I'm going to propose amending it on second reading to even carry more.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The good representative from Cody brings up a very important point. All of us are exposed to ideas that could be beneficial, and that's why the broad expression is better than starting down the litany of trying to itemize what we have as the soup du jour research project of the day, as opposed to using this board as they were designed to help us focus with the university and their researchers on those projects that will be most beneficial to the state of Wyoming in the shorter period of time. Some of the proposals, just to give you an example, since I do work with that group, have come in for deep sea sequestering of CO2. Very well written request for matching grants from the program. And that's being done. That's being done in the North Sea. But that doesn't benefit Wyoming. And that's why we want to have that group, with their resources, vet what the requests are for the research project. So I'd urge staying with the bill as drafted.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern, and I invite the Good Minerals Chairman to correct me if I'm wrong, my concern is that we don't do a lot for Wyoming if we only talk about how to combust the coal more cleanly, if we don't encourage folks to develop research that focuses on what you do with the carbon after you've captured it, then we really haven't done what we need to do for Wyoming's future. And I guess I would ask the chairman of Minerals if there are other places in the university where sequestration is being considered.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and a good question from the good representative from Cheyenne. Carbon capture and sequestering is what's behind the GE University of Wyoming project that is out now for proposals for siting, and we'll have a significant amount of state and university emphasis in matched by General Electric. That's their focus, and that's one of the projects that's been vetted and supported by this Clean Coal Task Force in the School of Energy Resources. So that's a very good question. There are those kinds of projects going on. Now, the research projects that have been matched grant from the university are a broad spectrum. They are such things as chemical kinds of transactions that you can do in the stream to hopefully take out all of the impurities, and it's just not just carbon dioxide, but mercury and other components that can be harmful to the environment. And they had a probability, at least from the analysis that was done, that they could pay off. I think they got about 10 projects or 10 active studies out there right now, and expect more in the future as we continue to fund this. And they're across the board. I don't have the full descriptor of each one of those research projects, and I can probably have that for tomorrow's, if that's a question that what you'd like to hear about. I just don't have it with me today.
Chairman Childers?
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess I would specifically like to see what projects they're looking at. And when the discussion of carbon sequestration did come up, however, the professor from the University of Wyoming that was discussing the carbon sequestration before is no longer here. He's down in Colorado. Specifically, one of the things I said, that was such a huge project in Rangeley that a company had a carbon dioxide flood, and there's a lot of history that could be utilized to see how it works in this state. In particular, we have one huge project in the Salt Creek field, but and I know that company researched that because I had conversations with them. But my concern is, continued concern, is sometimes the universities have a tendency to narrow their focus or go into research of new things and not take into account what has occurred in the past. Now, I know we're drifting a little bit off this amendment, but it is pertinent in that we want to make sure that this carbon clean coal task force utilize existing processes, past history, and so forth. And I'd be happy to talk to the chairman of the Minerals Committee There are a few things that I think should be changed in this bill. In particular, the Romanex 3 that we're proposing to amendment to amend, it states with an emphasis on methods of combusting bituminous coal at high altitudes. There's nothing wrong with that, but it seems to narrow it a little bit. And I think that we need to address that. So if the good chairman would give me that list, it might remove some of my heartburn about the way the language is in there. But I'm still owning for the amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I will, in fact, get the list of the projects that they had, and I think that'll give you the broad scope of it. And the word of emphasis, I think that was created in part as we put this together because we do have a fair amount of low-quality coal, high-altitude, high-moisture coal that we're burning in this state, and we wanted some emphasis on that. So that's just an explanation of the word emphasis.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rising on and against the amendment, we've passed some very innovative legislation through this body having to deal with carbon sequestration. And the justification that I've always used in my mind when I supported that was that whether or not you believe that carbon dioxide is the cause of global warming or whatever, it's good for us to have this because we need a framework in place. This takes it one step farther in my mind because we're now, as an institution, admitting that carbon dioxide, the effluent of carbon dioxide is unclean, and we are the largest coal-producing state in the United States. And we're now emphasizing that, and I don't think that's a policy decision that this institution should make. I think there could be some ramifications for us going down that road, and it's not something that I'm willing to do today. Thank you.
All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Excuse me. Point of order.
Representative Carson.
Can I have my second chance?
Sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, you know, the rub for me was the particular emphasis on the burning of subbituminous coal at high altitudes and making that our research dollar priority. To me, that's an inequity of where we should focus our dollars and our direction as a body and a whole. That may be my opinion. I hope that it's shared by all of you. But if we really look at the grand scheme of things and what we need to be focusing on in this legislature is not discuss or debate climate change on the floor, but to realize that Wyoming has on our balance sheet one of the largest carbon liabilities. And if we want to keep the funding coming into this particular building and do all the wonderful things and programs that we do, we've got to figure out a way to solve that issue. And for me, the emphasis, I would rather delete the subbituminous coal emphasis and put it more on sequestration if that's where our research dollars go. To me, that seems like the bigger problem. It seems like the bigger hurdle. It seems like the necessary hurdle. And that's the reason that I brought this amendment forward. If we were to delete the emphasis on the subbituminous coal and the burning of that and just leave it clean coal technologies, I have every trust in the School of Energy and the University of Wyoming and all the researching staff that they would be able to recognize that as a priority and fulfill our intents. The intent of this put into just the burning of coal to me is the wrong emphasis, and I would ask for your favorable support.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against the amendment, because I think it unnecessarily limits the task force. Carbon capture and storage technology is only one aspect of combustion of subbituminous coal. There are issues of mercury, SOX, NOx, that also need to be included in the combustion of clean coal at high altitude. And so I'd be careful as a body for providing unnecessary emphasis when the whole issue in front of us, the whole scope of this bill, is clean coal technology from every perspective, not from just some limited perspectives. And while I understand the spirit of the drafter of the amendment and agree wholeheartedly that carbon capture and sequestration is one of the most important things we can do, I'm hesitant to limit the scope of this task force with this amendment.
All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I did have a question on some of the funding that looks like it's available to be spent by the tax task force. I see on the bottom of page 2 that the task force is going to issue reports to the governor and the Minerals Committee. And then on the bottom of page 3, the task force is, after submitting recommendations to the Joint Minerals Committee, on the top of page 4, then the task force may award funds in clean coal technology account to proposals that it has. The clean coal technology account is addressed on page 5, and it has $3,800,000 in it. I'm assuming that it says that that's what's in there, and that's going to be available for the task force through that 2117-121F, which is at the bottom of page 3. What's envisioned with the task force having the power to spend that money?
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank the good Sheridan Chairman for his question. It's a very rigorous process, and what they do is they, through the mechanisms of contacting research people, they publicize that the state of Wyoming has an opportunity for them to participate in clean coal technology research. And that goes out to universities, it goes out to national laboratories, it goes out to independent research people. They look at what's there, they know what they're trying to do, and they try to have that fit the requirements that we've put on this one, and that is for the clean burning of low, if you will, a BTU, high moisture, at high altitude coal, because we want this to benefit the state of Wyoming. And with that, you get a number of proposals coming in, and they have to show at least a dollar for dollar match for everything that they are asking for in this grant money, the $3.8 million that was referenced. And at the moment, we're getting about 3-to-1 monies from others to the match that we make with state monies for research projects. And I wish I had in front of me the projects that we've had, and I think that would answer a lot of people's question. They are broad, but they're also relevant, and at least they're judged by this panel in this process as being those most applicable to the state of Wyoming.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I believe that does answer my question. It does surprise me a little bit, though, that's a seems like a phenomenal amount of money to be that is now outside of the appropriations of the legislature and being spent by a third party. I guess I haven't seen that often before, and I guess we've given the business council a considerable amount of money, but we also have some controversy on how some of that money is being spent. So I just kind of was trying to follow the money in there and notice that this task force was going to be the one who is it certainly empowers them.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It isn't just the task force that makes that decision. This comes through the governor's budget, the funding, and the use of AML funds, the ones that it's focused on coal. And you remember his pitch and at least the desire of the leadership of the legislature is to have that money go for the abandoned mines that they have to clean up first and then for coal-related projects. And so that's vetted that way through the administration's budget and our appropriations committee and their, if you will, review of all use of AML monies. And that's the future source of money on this.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chairman of the Minerals Committee, because that increases my comfort level a lot, because that's going through the process that we're used to, and I appreciate the explanation.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 111 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
House bill 111 has passed the committee of the whole.
Madam Chairman, privilege of the floor, please.
Chairman Lennon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's my pleasure to acknowledge and ask the body to recognize we have some guests here from the travel and tourism group from the state of Wyoming, and they are hosting dinner tonight for those of you who want to go. They're watching up in the east balcony, and I'll introduce to you Connie Lester, Jackie Dorothy, Debbie Caldwell, and Penny Becker. Welcome to the house.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill...
Madam Chairman.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's not often that we have nurses from Campbell County come to this body. And it's even less often that when they get an opportunity to be announced from the floor that they turn it down. But I don't think we ought to let her get away with that. And that is Noreen Kasparik, RN, who is one of the teachers and actually the director of the student nurse teaching program, Campbell County Memorial Hospital. And she's right above my head, and she deserves a hand.
Representing Stubson. Okay, the next bill for our consideration is Bill 59. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 59, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to liquor licenses and golf clubs. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Harvey, Lockhart, Meyer, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Sign, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 59 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendment. And I'd prefer to turn the explanation of both the standing committee amendment and the bill over to the good legislator from Casper, Wyoming.
Representative Stubson.
Madam Chair, I come before you in support of both the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will I'll do a little bit of explanation of the bill just as context for the amendment. This issue arises in a number of places around the state, and it arises because of a peculiarity in our liquor license laws that provides that an owner of a liquor license may hold only one liquor license. And that is fairly easy to deal with as a private individual. For example, I can hold many liquor licenses. I just need to set up separate LLCs or separate corporations to do that, and that's often done around the state. But it poses some difficulty for political subdivisions because you can't just simply form another political subdivision to hold the liquor license. And the way that this has sort of come to fruition, I know in my town and in others, for example, my town has a retail liquor license that it utilizes with a community event center, but it also has a golf course. And it was utilizing a golf course liquor license and a retail liquor license, but it was told by the enforcement authorities that they couldn't do that. They could only have one of the liquor licenses, which forced a sort of flipping back and forth of the retail license, trying to cover with catering licenses, resulted in substantial expenditures for the publication costs of transferring it from the events complex to the golf course, and was really a hassle that as a private individual you'd be able to get around, but you can't as a municipality. And that's where this bill comes in. And it simply provides, and it's fairly narrowly tailored, but it simply says that a political subdivision may hold both a retail liquor license and a golf club liquor license. The second portion of the bill is that it provides that it may lease that liquor license to an operator of a golf course. And that those two points are where the Standing Committee amendment comes in. In consultation with other folks around the state that have liquor licenses, they had some concerns about the bill and wanted to make sure that it was narrow enough not to impede on their private enterprise. And so the Standing Committee amendment essentially limits political subdivisions to two club liquor licenses. As I mentioned in committee, that probably makes sense because most communities in Wyoming, if you have more than two golf courses that you're operating, you probably have more problems than just the liquor license issue. So, but it limits that to the two liquor licenses, and then it also ensures that only those political subdivisions that have the liquor license club bills can sublease out the liquor licenses to the operators of the golf course. And so with that, I would stand for questions on the amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee amendment, and the question's been called. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Standing Committee number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
And I would take any other questions if there are any, but I would just suggest to you that liquor licenses and golf clubs belong in the same breath with mom and apple pie. So.
Is there any more discussion on the bill? The question being called, all those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 59 do pass. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
House Bill 59 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 113. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 113, introduced by Representative Buchanan, an act relating to regulation of traffic regarding careless driving. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Peasley, Quarburg, Throne, no, Mercer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 113 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. I'll explain the Standing Committee Amendment real quick. if you just flip in the bill, it deletes page 3, lines 5 through 23, and the first two lines on page 4. What that was doing, we had accidentally put careless driving under the definition of serious traffic violation, and that was not what the intent of the bill was supposed to do. So in committee, we just took that out. It's a small part, and I would ask for your aye vote on the standing committee amendment.
Okay, you've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Question being called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we're back on the bill. On the standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the explanation of the bill, I'll turn this over to the fine gentleman from Goshen.
Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring before you today House Bill 113, Careless Driving. And the first thing I'd like to say is in response to the thoughts I'm sure that are out there, oh, he's creating another crime. I want to tell you my rationale for bringing this is actually the converse of that. As a prosecutor and I've done defense work as well, I've found that our statutes are a little bit inadequate when dealing with mainly our youth who, from time to time, and I was one of them, drive carelessly and with some stupidity even. And basically, many of the municipalities across the state have ordinances that prohibit careless driving. But our state statutes don't have a statute for careless driving. And so what you're leaving the highway patrol with and your county sheriffs and deputies with is basically two options in dealing with anyone who's driving carelessly. And that is they can either charge them with reckless driving under 315229, or they can charge them with exhibition of speed under 241110. The problem with careless driving is it's much too severe. Careless driving is any person who drives a vehicle in a willful or wanton disregard for the safety of persons or property. And so it's a fairly serious offense. It carries with it a license suspension. And I really don't enjoy having to deal with these types of tickets for kids that have not driven. Maybe it's willful, but it's not wanton disregard for really safety. They're just out messing around and being stupid and driving carelessly. And then they get a reckless driving ticket. Well, it's not really reckless driving, and it's really not something that I want to see folks get their license suspended for. If the behavior is reckless driving, then they can be charged with reckless driving and maybe their license should be suspended. The other option that I told you about was this exhibition of speed, which is a popular one for officers to charge, and it's pretty innocuous. I think it's a fine of not less than more than $30 and maybe 10 days in jail. The problem with it is it's a product of the 50s where people used to drag race. So what the statute really prescribes is you can't engage in an acceleration contest or an exhibition of speed. So that doesn't really fit careless driving anyway. So the reason I bring the bill is because I don't want folks getting the reckless driving for something that's not reckless. And exhibition of speed is the wrong charge. It doesn't even fit. And so you can't even do anything about the careless. So what you have before you is the careless driving, and you can see the language here about using due and diligent care normally exercised by a reasonably prudent person under similar circumstances and where such operation of the motor vehicle creates an unreasonable risk of harm to persons or properties guilty of careless driving. The rest of the bill basically mirrors what we make DUI and reckless applicable to. There might be some discussion, like we had in committee, on whether or not we want this to apply just on our public roadways or also on private property. For example, if you look on page 2, our current law when it comes to 31-5-225, 31-5-229, which is reckless, and 233, which is DUI, and 1101 and 1112 deal with liability assurance, I believe. It says they apply upon highways and elsewhere throughout the state. So that kind of means private property. You can be charged for DUI on private property. And so you kind of got to think of that issue, and you have to think of, you know, maybe the grocery store parking lot and things like that. I really don't have a preference on that. And there was an amendment in committee that was defeated on that, and you're going to hear some more about that today, I'm sure, in a little bit of debate. I don't mind where this is applicable, other than I would say I'd like to make sure it's applicable in our state parks. But on private property, that's not what I'm after. I'm after just creating the careless driving statute so that careless driving isn't overcharged as reckless. And that's basically the bill. The standing committee amendment was explained rather well. We didn't want that to be a serious infraction for people who hold commercial driver's licenses, so that was taken out of the bill. And I stand for any questions.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a question for the sponsor on 317102. Why did you place this definition under serious traffic violation instead of moving violation or some other? Oh, it was. Okay. Never mind.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In the law, there is a thing called void for vagueness. This is a doctrine that we have developed over our jurisprudence because we believe that due process applies to everybody. And if you were listening at the beginning of the introduction of this bill, you noticed that I was the only one who voted against it in the committee. And the reason I did that is I am very concerned that, and let me tell you what I have found here. Regarding the void for vagueness doctrine. It says, if a person of ordinary intelligence cannot determine what persons are regulated, what conduct is prohibited, or what punishment may be imposed under a particular law, then the law will be deemed unconstitutionally vague. I would ask everyone in this room to take a careful look at page 1, lines 13 through 16, where it says, any person who drives any vehicle in a manner inconsistent with the exercise of due and diligent care normally exercised by a reasonably prudent person under similar circumstances and where such operation of a motor vehicle creates an unreasonable risk of harm to persons or property is guilty of careless driving. I'm not sure I know what that means. And we need to know what things like this mean before we pass them through this body. So I would just ask you to be very careful as we move forward with this bill. Thank you.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, there's a similar bill. This is only for the bill. There's been a similar bill been brought concerning cell phones at least 4 or 5 times. And I think it's something similar is being tried on the other end of the hall. And I've talked to that person before and indicated if you address the issue overall on people not paying attention when they're driving, then I'd probably support it. And I would commend the majority floor leader for bringing this bill and maybe to answer the question about how do we determine some of these. Quite frankly, there are some people that can drive a car with a cell phone stuck in their ear and do a pretty decent job. And then there's a number of other people that drive that car with a cell phone, and they don't know what they're doing. They're all over the road, and I've avoided a number of them. And then, of course, the texting issue probably tops the list when it comes to cell phones. But cell phones alone aren't the answer. Eating, and if you check with YDOT, they have a whole list of situations where it's careless driving, putting on makeup, reading. I had a professor in college that went through a divided highway. He had all his books to one side of him, and he had papers right up in front of him on the steering wheel, and he totaled his car. Dang lucky he didn't die, but he was somewhat involved in being prepared for the teaching the class and wasn't doing a very good job of driving. And everybody's heard of the famous story of somebody that rented a van that wasn't from this country and going down the road and saw there was a little button that they can push on cruise control, pushed the button, went in the back of the vehicle to get a drink. Didn't do too good on that one. But the highway patrol and other law enforcement people have the ability of seeing people, just like with drinking and driving, they have the ability of them determining if they're driving all over the road and not paying attention to what they do. You need to remember that the driver's license is a privilege, not a right. And when you use that right, you're supposed to be doing it in a prudent manner and paying attention to what you're doing. And I commend the majority floor leader for bringing this. The law enforcement officers can handle it, and I would strongly urge that you pass this bill.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the bill. Madam Chairman, every day I have, when I'm not down here, I'm in contact with city law enforcement, county law enforcement, Wyoming Highway Patrol. We have a little group of us that get together every day and share a cup of coffee and talk about some of these issues. And most of us maybe down here don't realize the discretion that law enforcement people have and need to do their job. And this is one of the issues that we talk about. As the good majority floor leader talked about, you know, there's this reckless driving charge is a very severe charge and carries with it some severe penalties. But there are some of these other people that are out there that need the attention, need some attention brought to them, because they consistently, after they're warned a few times about their how they drive, they continue to do these things, lapse into these areas. And it gives them some discretion, and this gives them a better tool to deal with these people. I don't want to pick on them, but sometimes having to pay a fine or coming before a judge helps some people with their behavior. So I've rise in favor of this bill because I believe it gives our law enforcement people that have to exercise a lot of discretion in their jobs another tool to do their job better with.
Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I want to express some caution for this bill. The good speaker before the last speaker described a few examples that I think were reckless. And the sponsor of the bill explained that there were things that happening that didn't quite reach the reckless stage, and that we needed something a little less. So I think that we very much are adding another crime here, and very much adding penalties and whatnot for that. And I think that it's fairly subjective. This manner inconsistent with the exercise of due and diligent care, normally exercised. I just think that there's a lot of room for interpretation there, and it's kind of a you decide what law enforcement, you decide what's reasonable. And I had a kid that worked for me that we lived down on a road that had a icy approach uphill, and gosh, that kid would run up to that approach. He could see both ways really good. And I don't know how he'd do it, but he'd get that car turned 90 degrees and go in the right direction. And I always marveled at what a driving ability he had. And yet, I don't think it would fit anybody's definition of that was a reasonably prudent person would drive that way, but he didn't need to. He was skilled enough to drive like he did, and he got away with it. And I don't know. I'm worried about this one, Madam Chairman. It just seems like we're adding some standards that almost make even the slightest little thing, not putting on a, I mean, already you can get ticketed for not, for motion, for not putting a blinker on when you go over to one side and all kinds of small things. And I'm really concerned about this. I think we might be going too far with this, and I'd ask the body to really question this proposal.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill is all about the reasonable man, the mythical reasonable man. And I think that's where we're having trouble here, is who is the reasonable man? So I dug some stuff quickly off the off the Internet. I was especially interested, if I can find it here, in all, what Oliver Wendell Holmes had to say about the reasonable man. Oliver Wendell Holmes explained the theory behind the reasonable person standard as stemming from the impossibility of measuring a man's powers and limitations. Individual personal quirks inadvertently injuring the persons or property of others are no less damaging than intentional acts. In order for society to function, a certain average of conduct, a sacrifice of individual peculiarities going beyond a certain point, is necessary for the general welfare. Thus, a reasonable application of the law is sought, compatible with planning, working, and getting along with others. As such, his neighbors accordingly require him, at his proper peril, to come up to their standard, and the courts which they establish decline to take his personal equation into account. Okay? So what's the answer to that? The reasonable man is the man that would act reasonably under the facts and circumstances that are presented according to the norms of the community. And that's a determination that juries make all the time. That's what the bringer of this bill has asked us to do, is put the reasonable man up there, measure this conduct against that of the reasonable man, and if it doesn't fit, then it's careless driving. If it does fit, it doesn't. And you are never going to be able to fully define careless any other way, because it changes with the facts and circumstances. So all you can do is take all the facts and circumstances, convene a jury of his peers, his neighbors, determine what the community standard is, and determine whether it was met or not. That's what this bill asks you to do.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to address some of the concerns that were raised by the good representatives from Sheridan County and Campbell County regarding maybe the vagueness. And I know there was a quote about, you know, what intelligent minds, you know, think is reasonable, or if we can't figure it out. Well, I think we can pretty much figure it out. And keep in mind, if you're going to pick at the language on careless driving, just look at reckless driving. You know, it's somewhat vague, too. It talks about willful and wanton disregard. Well, what's willful and wanton to one person might be a different definition to someone else. And that's a subjective standard. And like I said, the only reason I'm bringing this bill is right now you're not giving, we don't give law enforcement really any option except to charge a reckless just to get somebody's attention. And we're basically alleging they did something willful or wanton. Or they charge a statute that doesn't even apply. If you read 24.1.110, it doesn't even really apply. So when I read this language, and keep in mind, this language came from kind of an amalgamation of ordinances, municipal ordinances throughout the state. So I think as intelligent minds in this body, I think we can figure out what's due in diligent care when driving an automobile, what type of care is exercised by a reasonably prudent person. If you've got some kid doing a few donuts where there's some gravel on the road and it's 2:00 in the morning and there's not a lot of traffic around, that's probably not willful and wanton, you know. Probably wasn't going to hurt anybody. but I think all of us would say, was that the kind of exercise and due and diligent care a reasonable person would exercise? I don't think any of us, now that we're grown and mature, would drive like that nowadays. So I think we can figure this out. I don't think it's too vague. And like I said, remember my intent to bringing the bill is actually because I'm tired of people being overcharged. And it's not law enforcement's fault. It's just we don't give them another option. The folks that are in the jurisdiction outside the municipalities don't have another option. And they want this as well because they don't want to overcharge people that are driving carelessly by charging them or citing them with reckless driving. And reckless driving is bad on the insurance. Again, license suspension. Careless, if you look at the fine under Title 12, reckless is 6 months and $750 standard misdemeanor. This one's up to $200 fine in 20 days. So it's a lot less in penalties too.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 113 pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House bill 113 has passed in the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 190. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 190, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to suspension of driver's licenses for non-payment of child support. This bill was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Hallinan, McKim, Peterson, No, Madden, Swanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 190 do pass. And for a full and complete explanation of the bill, I refer to the very valued gentlewoman from Laramie County.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today I bring you House Bill 190, which creates a new process for the administrative suspension of driver's licenses in child support enforcement cases. I know this topic causes discomfort for many. Many folks have constituents where they may feel that someone has been treated unfairly on either side in a child support enforcement case. These discussions usually raise a lot of emotional issues, and I'd ask all of you to set those emotional thoughts aside for the moment and listen while I explain this bill. I think it's important for the body to know that the Department of Family Services Child Support Enforcement Division has the power now to administratively suspend licenses. The statute as it's written now is written broadly. They can suspend anybody who is currently in arrearage for any amount. And it doesn't matter whether they've made a payment in the last 90 days or not. If they're in arrearage, they can administratively suspend the licenses. It's also true that under current law, time to request a hearing is only 20 days, and under my proposed bill, it's 60 days. So I think there's been some confusion in the discussions I've had with folks in preparation for presenting this bill that we're creating a new process. Actually, we're not creating a new authority for the Department of Family Services. We're modifying the authority that they have now. And I would submit to you that the proposal in House Bill 90 actually provides more protection for the person who receives the notice of suspension than the current law. So with that background, I'd like to explain why we need this. And for that, I would encourage you to find the handout that I presented. It's just a single page handout. Under the proposed bill, it would apply in cases where somebody is more than $5,000 in arrears on their child support, and to folks who have not made a payment in 90 days. And I asked the Department of Family Services to gather data as to how many people folks would be covered by the bill. And you can see that it is not an insubstantial number of people. We have 1,594 non-custodial parents across the state who are more than $5,000 behind in their child support and haven't bothered to make a payment within 90 days, for the past 90 days. And I believe this information is relatively current, not current as of today, but relatively current. And then down below, you see the breakdown. The total owed on all these folks who are behind is over $29 million. Over $5 million of that is owed to the state. The state collects child support from folks whose families are on public assistance. So not only do non-custodial parents owe their families the money, some of them also owe the state money. So why did the Department of Family Services want this additional tool? Essentially, the administrative process we have now, in addition to not really providing much protection for the person who would get the notice of suspension, the administrative process we have now is burdensome. It requires the hearing to be in front of an administrative hearing officer. The bill as proposed would allow someone to appeal to court. So essentially the purpose of this bill is to provide the Department of Family Services with another tool to try and bring non-custodial parents into them to work out a payment plan. Under the bill, if a non-custodial parent receives a notice of suspension, they have 60 days to come into the Department of Family Services and enter into a payment plan. The goal is not to suspend somebody's license. The goal is to get folks into child support enforcement offices and to enter into a payment plan. And if their support order meets the requirements for modification, if their circumstances have changed, then the DFS can help them get a modification order. DFS has found that wage withholding is really their best tool. But we have situations where folks are independent contractors. Maybe they have employers who are less than scrupulous about following the law, and other circumstances where a wage withholding order doesn't work. And so this would be a tool to get those folks in. And the head of child support enforcement polled her offices. There are a number of circumstances where this could apply. Welders who are independent contractors, truck drivers who are independent contractors, who are making decent money and for some reason have elected not to pay their child support obligations. During the transportation committee meeting, some committee members asked whether it would be preferable to just throw folks in jail. Well, that doesn't really help folks get their child support, but also with some more itinerant folks, they've had trouble serving folks to get them in jail. Sometimes the custodial parent does not want the person thrown in jail. So they discourage child support enforcement from throwing a family member in jail because that's really not good for the kids. So jail is a limited option. Wage withholding doesn't cover everybody. There are other tools that child support enforcement has. They have they can suspend game and fish licenses. They can put liens on bank accounts. And sometimes when they've exhausted all of these options, they still haven't solved the problem. The Department of Family Services has looked to other states, and I'll just give you one example. In Colorado, with driver's license suspension notices. They ran an experiment where they did like a control group with no driver's license suspension, and then another group where they tried the driver's license suspension. And the information I have says that they generated an additional $5 million to children through this experiment. So it's a useful tool. And I've had folks ask me, well, what if somebody's in jail? Well, child support enforcement is not going to send a notice to suspend to somebody in jail. I mean, they have their address, so they'll know if they're in jail. It wouldn't do any good to send it to somebody who's perhaps already in jail on another offense. There's also the concern, well, the person can't get to work if you take their driver's license. Well, if they have a job, they need to come in and establish a payment plan. And if they come in and establish a payment plan, they'll have their driver's license so they can get to work. Also, there's a provision in the bill that allows temporary granting of driver's licenses for 120 days. So I've tried to address the concerns that have been brought to me just in conversations with folks. I think this is an important tool that the Department of Family Services needs to try and get money into the hands of our families who are entitled to the money. The procedures in place in the statute protect the person who receives the suspension notice. It's not an automatic suspension. They have a right to a hearing. Their interests are protected. So I think it represents a good balance. And I would just like to leave you with the thought that a friend of mine, my boss actually at the time, said to me when I was pregnant with my first child, once a parent, always a parent. And we have some folks out there who are not fulfilling their parental obligations, and if this is a tool that will remind them that they have obligations to fulfill if they can, I think we need to utilize it. And I would stand for any questions.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Fellow legislators, I certainly stand in support of this bill. In transportation, we heard testimony that substantiated this, and this sheet that's been handed out shows how gross this is. We got $29 million that we're trying to collect for these people. And as a general rule, we have single parents here with children. We heard testimony from a single parent that had a child there and some of the problems they had. The husband was employed over at the airport facility in Laramie, but yet they were behind on their child support. And you look down through your respective counties here, you'll see the numbers that are here. This is definitely a tool we need because driver's licenses are a very valuable commodity for these individuals. And the testimony and the evidence we heard brings forth the fact that these people will respond much better than the normal process that we go through. So I certainly urge the body to move forward on this piece of legislation.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wanted to run some things by that I think is relevant to maybe some successive readings on this bill. Some of us questioned the threshold upon which this would kick into effect. If you'll look at the handout that was passed out, and also on page 3 of the bill, you got to run up a bill of $5,000 in back support before this kicks in. And in my judgment, that's waiting too long. My grocer back home doesn't allow my grocery bill to get up to $5,000 before he starts dunning me. And the reason he does that is he knows if he waits until I owe $5,000, he'll probably never get it. And that's why he lets me know well ahead of that. And I think we have to recognize that same phenomena in this bill by lowering that threshold. I personally think that the business equivalent of these debts are above $5,000 and they're above 400 days old and things like that, that's the equivalent of a bad debt that you're never going to collect. And I think that if you apply this same bill to a lower arrears threshold, it will probably have some effect. But if we leave it the way it is and we don't change it in second reading or third reading, I think we're just kind of putting some laws on the books that will never be effective and prove out in a money sense. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Madam Chairman.
Speaker Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a question on page 3, line 18, that says the department shall notify the obligor by certified mail return receipt requested or by personal service. If notification by certified mail was unsuccessful, this implies that service has to be made of the notice. But it doesn't clearly say that. So I'm assuming, I don't think it does, but I'm assuming that it either has to be served by certified mail, return receipt requested, or by personal service. And if that service can't be achieved, then the suspension doesn't go into effect. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's the way I read it. And is it true that on page 4 at the top that it went from 90 to 60 days because this only applies to the administrative portion, only applies to suspensions where the amount owed is over $5,000? And then on page 5, lines 5 and 6, when I track that in with subparagraph J1 and 2, it doesn't track right to me. So you might take a look at that. And then then at the bottom of page 5, well, let me just, as I understand it, the license could be suspended forever. The license could be suspended forever if the person never paid the arrears in full or entered into a payment plan. So on page 5, line 22, a person whose privileges have been suspended for non-payment may be granted limited privileges by the district court or the Department of Transportation for a period not to exceed 120 days. I guess that's the limitation. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, that's all the questions I have, Madam Chairman. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Oh, Representative Byrd.
Madam Chairman, I'm here to speak against this bill. I think this bill does not take into account the court judgments of either party where one can be assigned an extremely large amount of money due immediately on the cessation of those legal proceedings. So based on that, you can have an immediate suspension and be in arrears a large amount of money, and then you could be in this situation where you can never catch up. You'll lose your license. You will not be able to go out and keep your job. So I think that this bill is bad. I think it needs to be rethought. I am totally against deadbeat dads and deadbeat moms who try to take advantage of the system, but I don't think that this bill addresses the problem. Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Madam Chairman, may I raise another point?
Speaker Simpson.
Thank you. That the good speaker from Cheyenne raised an interesting point there, and I think that could probably be addressed in subparagraph, is it F, Romanet 2, where it says they have to enter into a payment plan. It could say, or that they're current with the payment plan ordered by the court, or something like that. You might consider that.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will consider that. I'm not sure that I caught all of Mr. Speaker's questions, but I'll try and highlight some points. The notice does have to explicitly stay. It's a suspension, and I have a draft notice for anyone who would like to see it. It also has to clearly state the requirement to have a request for a hearing. With regard to the speaker's question about going from 90 to 60, the part of the bill that's been repealed and is not in here had a requirement that you request your hearing within 20 days. And so we've reduced the 90 to 60, but made the 60 apply to both the notice period and the time to request a hearing to minimize the risk of somebody inadvertently waiving a hearing requirement. With regard to subsection J, I will look into the speaker's concerns. I believe I've hit most of them, but I might have missed a couple.
Speaker Pro Tem Phil.
If a person is in arrears on his child support, then I just was trying to track what would happen then. Does the Department of Family Services then notify the Department of Transportation, or does the court notify the Department of Transportation? I just wasn't quite following that in the bill.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. We neglected to mention in our explanation of the bill that the representative of Driver Services attended the Transportation Committee hearing, and he and the Department of Family Services have worked well together in other circumstances, but the notice would come from the Department of Family Services to the Department of Transportation.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Peasley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I will, Madam Chairman, and I will try to get my nouns and pronouns straight today. I was reluctant to speak on this bill because I did speak when it was presented to the Judiciary Committee and shared with them my experience of 10 years of chasing deadbeat dads. And the problem I have speaking for it or against it is because we already have a law that allows them to do this under less critical situations, but they haven't used it. Now we want to make it a more fair and less urgent sort of process that we will now use to go after these fellows and ladies who have not paid their child support. The pursuit of deadbeat dads, as we used to call it, started about 50 years ago with the Runaway Papas Act. And it has accelerated over the years as welfare has accelerated. The more we paid out to moms, the more we encouraged dads to leave. The more we paid mom to take care of her children, the less she needed dad, and the more dad could get away not paying child support because the state would support the mother. It was almost declared malpractice in our part of the state to not set it up so that dad didn't pay much support and didn't have much in the way of visitation. That way you made both parties happy. Dad didn't have to pay support. Mom didn't have to put up with dad's visits. And it worked real good until the system started going bankrupt, and finally a fella named, well, I can't use his name, he was a representative from Georgia in the United States House of Representatives that got the Contract with America thing going, and we had the 4D program. And the 4D program set this up so that if you're going to get public assistance, you got to tell us where daddy is. And we had to go through a process sometimes of sorting through 8 or 10 potential fathers to establish paternity. And we set up a lot of these orders, and a lot of this $26 million represents perhaps even to this day some of the arrears we set up originally because we chased after them 10, 15, 20 years after the fact. Now here's the problem I have with it. When we went through this, everything was driven by federal mandate. And the federal government said, thou shalt. And, of course, we know in Wyoming, whenever they tell us to jump, we ask them how high. And so we went through a process of adopting all of their programs. And, of course, this included income withholding orders. We had our garnishments. We had our mandatory liens. We had a lot of show cause hearings. We suspended their right to hunt and fish, which amazed me. That slid right through. And then, of course, we really took a step forward when we invented the POSSE computer program, and that allowed us to sit in the comfort of our offices. Instead of chasing Dad, we just sat there and pushed buttons, and things happened. And some of the things that happened was these liens would get set up, or these wage withholding orders would be triggered. We had IRS intercepts, where we would just push a button, and the IRS would send us any money that was due to Dad. And I recognized, even when I was doing this, that this is where it's going. It's going to be some clerk somewhere in an office pushing a button that's going to enforce these orders. For me, for the 8 years we did it, the best thing I could think of was dragging Dad to court and have him explain to a tough judge, why aren't you supporting your kids? And watch him squirm, and then watch him get drugged down the hall, whining and howling that if I'm in jail, I can't pay support, and the judge saying, well, you haven't done it anyway. Now, I do know that we're having problems with some of the judges enforcing that. And I also recognize that this is an extra tool. But let me offer you this. They have a lot of arrows in their quiver, and they haven't used them all. And I do know that there's a laziness that's set into the program that I think is too bad. I'm not saying it's their fault, because I do think it's a matter of funding. And I recognize there are some daddies you just can't catch. They are elusive. Believe me, I did it in 23 counties and on the reservation during that time. And it is tough, and there are the uncatchables. And I'm not going to tell you that there aren't some out there that won't react to the driver's license. To say that $26 or $29 million is going to get collected is like saying everybody's going to stop having heart attacks when there's no smoking. It just doesn't happen overnight. It will happen, maybe gradually, and it will happen primarily to the responsible fathers out there who care about having a driver's license. But what I found in the two or three cases where we suspended licenses, Dad still drove. Okay, now aren't those the same guys you're worried about running into you not being insured? And I think let me back up and add one other concept to this. And I'm not even really arguing against this. I just what I want you to understand is I just don't think this is working well, and I don't know that what you're going to do today is going to make it any better. But the thing that triggered my even talking today was the comment from the contrite representative from Cody, who was left here, who talked about driving being a privilege. And that really bugs me. And I know it's true legally, but I tell you what, when they tell me Wyoming is one town with long streets, I want you to know that your right to work, to raise a family, to worship in your church, and to just function in a society is dependent on that driver's license. And if anywhere it approaches a right, it should be in Wyoming. That is a pretty important document in this state. You don't have it, I'm telling you what, these dads that get suspended are still going to drive. They're going to. And you're going to have that problem on the side. So I do know, and oh, and I got to add you one other thing, and excuse me for going on. I'm kind of on a roll. One of the funny things that happened in about 1998 or 99, whenever this law came into effect, I was working on the 4D program. I was a contractor with my partner, and we were supposed to help the director that was in charge of the program at that time design the income or the suspension of driver's license, because they said the federal government mandated it. And to be honest with you, I intentionally worked to make it as unenforceable as possible. And that's why they're having trouble with it right now, is it just doesn't work the way we designed it. So I'm not speaking for or against this thing. I'm just telling you that I am concerned. I'm just lending to confusion. But I just don't think this is going to do much. And I want you not to use driver's licenses as a constant hammer to get all this public policy done. I know it's important to have people compliant, but let's not use something as important as the ability to get to and from your job and your work and to take your kids to school and just fluff it off as a privilege we have that we as the state can jerk or return at will. So on that, I stand for and against the bill. What did I do? Well, nothing.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Oh, Representative Throne.
I would just like to thank everybody for their careful attention to this issue. And again, if folks can drive their kids to school and they can drive to work, then they need to be making their child support payments. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill 190 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Oppose?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those that for it, stand up. The Bill 190 has passed the House. Passed the Committee of the Whole. Okay. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 112. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 112, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to economic development regarding workforce housing program. This bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Philp, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 112 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. And I'd like to call on my barber from Casper, Wyoming, who...
Representative Lockhart, Standing Committee Number 1.
It's number two is it is my
it deletes number one.
Your amendment's number one.
I stand. Standing committee amendment number one passed when we first introduced this to the House. It went to the Appropriations Committee and it came back with what I have in front of me, standing committee amendment number two, which reduced the budget on it. Madam Chairman, I apologize. This young fellow is getting slow in his age. I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and urge your support. Standing Committee Number 1, I'll explain, was when the bill came to the Minerals Committee, we reduced the appropriation in there from $40 million to $10 million, and it did pass the Committee of the Whole. And I'd urge your support of that so that we can, on Amendment Number 2, correct that action. So I urge your support of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Question being called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oppose? Okay, I believe there's another standing committee.
use a football expression after that fumbling.
Standing committee number one has been adopted. We'll go on to the next standing committee, number two.
After that fumbling, I think that's an appropriate term, introduction of standing committee number two, I'd like to call on the good Barbara from Casper, Wyoming, to explain standing committee amendment number two.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've never been called
point
a barber.
Of order. Point of order. The good barber from Casper, the chairman of appropriations has to move the amendment. I'm sorry, and I appreciate your support. You can explain it once I move it. So I further move.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move standing committee amendment number two to House Bill 112 as amended. And now, the barber, if you'd like to explain the motion.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, it's very simple. I understand the barber thing now. I gave this a haircut, and I thought he was talking about my own haircut I gave myself for the weekend. And I just give that offer to any member. Some of you ladies, I've got a nice pair of clippers. Anybody ever needs a free haircut? Anyway, we gave this a haircut of, if you look in the, we just took it down to zero, the appropriation. And so on page 12, it's a haircut. And that wasn't even number two. That was down to the clippers. It's all gone. The money's gone out of there, and we took the $50,000 for administration as well, although they assured us they have ample staff to continue the process of rulemaking if and when someday we choose to fund this program. So with that, I'd urge your adoption of the standing committee amendment number two, and then we'll get back on the bill.
Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Standing committee amendment number two has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Lockhart.
Madam Chairman, if there are no questions, I'll call for the question.
I missed it. Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I've been sitting in my desk since this has been introduced, and I haven't heard an explanation of the bill. I'm not sure that is important before we vote on it.
Chairman Lockhart, would you please explain the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I mentioned, it's late in the day. Members of the 60th, I bring you Workforce Housing Program, House Bill 112. It's what I would consider an old friend that has some new assets. We passed from the House and through the Senate, and with a small appropriation, a Workforce Housing Bill a year or so ago, and it fundamentally had a provision for loans for infrastructure within the community, and it was not a bill that this House hadn't heard, at least those that were here at that time, on different occasions. And the rules were drafted so that if somebody wanted to take advantage of this loan, they would go through and it would be constitutional. We had the constitutional challenge of state money going to benefit either a business or an individual. We believe those rules reached that point as we heard the discussion through the interim, and it was an interim topic of the Minerals Committee. In addition, as we were testing whether a loan program was what was needed to develop workforce housing, it became apparent that grants were an important item, because part of the reason, if you had a loan, the developers, the communities could get money probably cheaper than they could have gotten from the state of Wyoming. So we added the provision that it could be grants in addition to loans. And as we developed what we now believe is a better bill, we added things that are transitional for people getting into homes. We've added rental units that can be covered by this bill, at least the infrastructure for the rental units. And in addition, we found that particularly in the smaller communities, there wasn't money for the planning so that they could effectively use the development of property for workforce housing. And so there is some money in this bill for that provision. I think I've touched on the major changes from the one that we passed here a couple of years ago with the grant provision and $1 million for startup. I would add that there were some inquiries on the loan program, but no actions, and the feedback that we got from both the developers and from the business council is that we needed something a little broader to solve the workforce housing need in the state of Wyoming. So that's the general overview of the bill. I'd be glad to walk through the bill with you, but most of the members of this House have seen the verbiage that's in there, and with that I would ask if there are any questions.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do develop housing as a living, and I just need to ask this question because it's heavy on my mind. Without the appropriations of $40 million, what does the bill do?
Chairman Lockhart.
The good representative from Fremont County cut to the chase. One of the things it does, it allows the business council to develop the guidelines and rules for apartments, if you will, for planning monies, and for single-family homes. By that I mean, we originally had in the concept that it would be just single-family homes, because that was our desire. Every working family should have a single-family home. The economics pushed us to where you had to look at multiplexes, townhouses, if you will. And the reason I'm kind of frustrated up here, I thought we'd talk this bill over with this group, and I'm getting some nods that we had, and I thought I'd covered it once before. But that said, I hope that I opened the answer the question from the good representative in Fremont County. We will be back as the funding process goes forward to see if we can get more money for it. But we'll use this interim time for that strategic planning component. We have $1 million that can do some work there, and in turn, firming up the rules. Not unlike what we did with the original one with grants, where we could met the constitutional issues that are in the text of the bill.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is an issue that this body is going to have to very seriously look at, and I would hope that we'd do it sooner than later, because, you know, what we're having in Wyoming is so many out-of-state workers. They're pulling their fifth wheels here to the state of Wyoming, and the state of Wyoming is providing them with these wonderful jobs, and that money just goes out of state. They put it in accounts and send it back home to their families. And, you know, our job here is to move Wyoming's economic future forward. And if we're not providing the workers with a place to live and we're giving them a job, we have to think about the economics of the whole thing. Where does the money end up at? And does it stimulate Wyoming's economy, or does it stimulate another state's economy? So eventually we're going to have to deal with it. It's just kind of like Wyoming's old version of the No Child Left Behind Act. We have it, but we don't fund it.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I see that there are grants for communities to do their planning on zoning and that sort of thing. And there's grants for various organizations within the communities that are involved in developing community housing or housing within the community. Does this also provide grants for developers who are building houses, or grants for them to build infrastructure and that sort of thing?
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The monies that from the state go to the cities, towns, and counties or special districts, not to the developers. And then they because they will ultimately own the infrastructure that's put in. So how they use the money to have that construction done is up to them, but it is to cities, towns, and counties. It's state money to the same sort of thing that we do in a lot of other areas, is we support our different governmental agencies on their needs. It's this one, but it's directed at housing.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 112 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy. Carson.
No.
Childers. Childers.
Excused.
Childers excused. Cohey. Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds. Edmonds. Edmonds excused. Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Yes. Aye.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi. Jorgensen.
No.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe. Semlek.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 31 ayes, 27 noes, 2 excused.
Pursuant to it. House Bill 112 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 207. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 207, introduced by Representative Carson, an act relating to game and fish regarding internet hunting. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Vice Chairman, Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 207 do pass. And for an explanation of the bill, I'll turn it over to the sponsor.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, my fellow colleague for Albany County. I bring you House Bill 207, Internet Hunting. I think some of you might have gotten the email that I shot over to you earlier. I'm glad some of us are still awake. Representative from House District 3 is a hard act to follow. I hope he's in favor or against this bill. Sorry. Freshman legislators are allowed to do that because we spent 7 days in training together. All right. Back to the bill. I apologize. While it's a one-paragraph bill that says no person shall operate, provide, sell, or use, or offer to operate, provide, sell, or use any computer software or service that allows a person not physically present to remotely control a firearm or weapon to hunt any live wildlife. Basically, the intent of this bill is to ban or outlaw this particular type of hunting in the state of Wyoming. And the intent is... if you would be on a computer anywhere in the world, that you could fire a live round at an animal in the state of Wyoming. This would also ban if you did that, fired a... basically, you'd be on your computer with a mouse, and you were able to point and click and shoot a rifle or a gun at a live animal. As you can see, it probably has... some security issues besides the intent of the bill. I won't comment on those, and I'll let you guys use your imagination. The genesis of this bill is there was an individual in the state of Texas that started a business to allow this to be able to fire from your computer. You pay money and you shoot a gun, I guess, on a tripod at wildlife in a game reserve. We don't allow those. A game reserve, as I understand it, in the state of Wyoming. Nonetheless, if someone were to set that up in Wyoming, as we're only one of the one remaining states to not ban this particular type of hunting, I would worry about our wildlife and our safety. I would guess I'd just probably leave this up to questions. There may be some questions on how this technically works, and there are some specifics, and I did send you guys some information about what states have done this and what the genesis and the timeline is. The intent, I guess, is to be proactive at this point. I can't testify in front of you that this is a issue that has come to play in Wyoming, but I'm trying to solve an issue before it begins. And as you know, things on the internet can occur quickly, move fast. We don't want a market established here under our nose, and that we don't know anything about what some business may be developing. So the game and fish and sportsmen alike agree that this is not a form of hunting that we want to perform in this state. And I would ask for your consideration, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Zwanitzer, the elder.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question. Do the other states that have this law in effect, do they have some sort of an agreement? Well, I guess I'm trying to make sure that we're guilty on both ends. We're guilty on the end where the actual shooting occurs, and we're guilty on the end of where we hit the mouse. And so I guess if those both states, well, if they found an illegal operation in one state that's already in this agreement, do they have an agreement with this? With the neighboring state that both entities would be charged?
That's an interesting question. I guess in thinking about this committee and thinking about this and talking it out loud with people, how I envision this work is somebody's got to set up the gun in Wyoming. So if they're doing this particular act of shooting or operating the software in another state, you'd have to be here at some point. You'd physically have to be there to set it up. And the fact that it's software using the internet, it connects on both ends. So I look at the wording, and I think it's inclusive to imply that they would be breaking the law in the state of Wyoming. How that transfers to another state, you'd still be guilty here. I don't know how we would go after them in another state. But somebody, like I said, would have to be here at some point, and that would be what we're trying to discourage and outlaw.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a question, and I'm just wondering, in committee, did you examine whether or not this would be, given our composite of game laws now, whether this would be legal as things stand right now? In other words, what I'm getting at is this bill really necessary? I know from hunting myself, you've got to sign you have to personally sign the tag when you at the point of the kill, and you know there's probably a whole slew of other game laws that indirectly preclude this kind of activity. If I'm wrong, I'd like to hear.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer the gentleman's question, I would only offer the comments from the Game and Fish Department, and I think I'm okay with mentioning by name as it relates to the laws that they uphold. There are certain laws that deal with trophy animals and tagging and how a hunt is performed and the rules that go with that. They indicated to us in committee that this may... those laws may cover that particular issue. What I'm trying to be is what they indicated was this wasn't all-inclusive. So some of those big game animals, yes, maybe they could go after those individuals if they were performing or doing this. Obviously, if you're not here to hunt, you don't have a hunting license. You're not actually, you wouldn't be in the state. I don't know how you'd get a license. So some of those things make sense. But this would be for all wildlife. And they indicated that the way that some of those laws that they upheld do not cover everything. It's not all inclusive.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Frankly, this whole concept is kind of creepy. I understand. 23.3.401 says no person should engage in any commercial operation or business authorized under this act without a proper license. And I guess if you're doing internet hunts for profit, maybe that would be covered by the bill. And I understand about big game. Is the focus of this bill to prohibit, I guess, internet hunt or to cover those things that aren't covered, which would be like internet hunting of rabbits and prairie dogs? And I guess if we're thinking about that, maybe we should prohibit internet fishing too, as well.
Representative Carson.
I believe this also would include crustaceans, as we learned in our committee, and so it is very inclusive, and there is some holes. And I don't know if that answered your question or not, but
is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Brown's motion that when the
Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 207 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 207 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report. Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 76, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 47, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 83, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 35, recommended do pass. House Bill 26, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 186, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 48, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 84, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Buchanan moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. House Bill 60, recommended do pass. House Bill 111, recommended do pass. House Bill 59, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 113, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 190, recommended do pass. House Bill 112, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 207, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Davison, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor of adoption of the Committee of the Whole report, please say aye. All those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Thank you, Representative Davidson. Nice job. Messages from the Senate.
Message 147. Mr. Speaker, a motion to reconsider the bill listed below passed the Senate by the vote indicated. Senate File 11, State Parks Ranger Authority, ayes 22, noes 8. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 115, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Kennedy, Mercer, Patton, Korberg, Throne, no, Barbudo, Gingrey, Peasley. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 243, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Kennedy, Mercer, Patton, Throne, no, Peasley, Korberg, conflict, Gingrey, signed, Representative Mercer, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 251, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Peasley, Korberg, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 97, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 100, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 146, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 157, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Landon, Millen. No, Davison, Harvey, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Harvey, Vice Chairman.
Re-referrals, Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to re-refer House Bill 146 to Committee Number 2. That's Emergency Medical Services Sustainability Trust.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to re-refer House Bill 97, Weights and Measures, and House Bill 100, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, to Committee Number 2, as they have an appropriation. Thank you.
Thank you. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Any other re-referrals? Committee announcements. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow afternoon upon adjournment in H-17 to hear House Bill 41, Cremation Expenses, House Bill 42, Burial Arrangements, and House Bill 120, Assisted Suicide.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations. On adjournment today, the Appropriations Committee would like to have a quick meeting in the Appropriations Room. And tomorrow, Mr. Speaker, Wednesday, January 28th, at 8 a.m. in House Room 204, the committee will meet to discuss House Bill 134, Natural Resource Large Project Funding. That's re-referred from travel. House Bill 180, Public Transit Account Funding, re-referred from transportation. House Bill 33, Expanded Opportunity Pilot Program, re-referred from education. House Bill 68, Property Tax Homestead Exemption, re-referred from revenue. And House Bill 87, Property Tax Assessment Rate 2, re-referred from revenue. And once again, Mr. Speaker, the Appropriations Committee will meet in Room 204 on adjournment.
Thank you. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 in H-18, and this is a revised agenda because some folks couldn't get here that we were expecting. The revised agenda is House Bill 171, Filing of Mineral Exploration Documents. That's a continuation, and then we will hear House Bill 196, Industrial Siting Act Amendments, and House Bill 195, Real Estate Act Amendments.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1 will hear the following bills tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. House Bill 231, Motor Vehicle Accidents, Serious Bodily Injury, House Bill 116, Recording of Custodial Interrogations, and House Bill 237, Name Changes Sealed.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8 on Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment, 4:20, today, January 27th, in Room H-17, to discuss House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance, House Bill 162, State Employees Retirement, Military Credit. House Bill 192, Military Scholarships. House Bill 96, Railroad Quiet Zones. And House Bill 233, Trains Blocking Roadways.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet Wednesday, January 28th upon adjournment. We will continue discussing House Bill 213, Rangeland Monitoring, House Bill 75, Subdivisions Water Supply Study, House Bill 99, Veterinary Loan Repayment Program, House Bill 166, Pregnancy Testing Cattle, House Bill 198, Wheat Marketing Commission Assessments, and House Bill 206, Care of Animals After Domestic Violence, and finally, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 193, Wyoming Food Freedom Act. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room 302 to discuss cigarette tax, House Bill 224, tax exemptions for renewable resources, House Bill 215, and House Bill 184, mineral tax audit refund. And also in the Hurstville Commons, we'll have a devotional time at 6:30 in the morning.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment Wednesday, January the 28th, in room H10, where we will take up the following bills. House Bill 173, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. House Bill 174, Provisional Opportunity Hathaway Scholarship. House Bill 223, Bullying Prevention. House Bill 269, School Finance At-Risk Funding.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H10 to consider the following bills. House Bill 6, Game and Fish Trapping. House Bill 136, State Legal Action, NEPA and ESA. House Bill 225, Bighorn Sheep, Ewe and Lamb Licenses. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the radio in the morning if you can. There's a potential for closures tomorrow because of high winds. So please be aware and be safe. Any other announcements? Representative Thompson is going to lead us in another round of Cowboy Joe to cheer the Cowboys on in their game against Air Force tonight. Thank you. Oh, I guess do we need to adjourn? I'm told we need to adjourn. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. General file tomorrow. I handed out a list. There's a few changes to that because we had some other bills show up here. House Bills 95, 105, and 53 there. They're right in a row. Move those down below House Bill 133 and then add to the very end of the list House Bill 104. And with that, Mr. Speaker, what?
Well, some of them are confused about the weather notice. Did the speakers... Wendy Manson handed out a
letter. Yeah, he said that.
Did he say that? Okay.
With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that we adjourn until 10 a.m., weather permitting, January 28, 2009.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. We are adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Representative Thompson.